Welcome to bonus episode 1 at the Podcast on Fire Network. Yeah, this was meant to be members-only content, what we're presenting to you, but I thought I'd change tack a little bit and posted on the website the full members-only bit, if you will, but as part of a series of bonus episode when we have a longer one seemingly to do rather than just cut together a few minutes of cut conversation that doesn't equal a bonus episode in my book. So, Kenneth Olson, and joining me for this bonus episode is Tom Kent Williams. Say hi.
Hello.
And David Harris.
Hello, everyone.
And what we're doing for this bonus episode is an extension of Vampire Season that we just put up on the website. We covered Mr. Vampire 1992 in that one. We covered Vampire versus Vampire. But you might have thought we'd forgotten about this. We didn't announce it at the end of the show. By the way, now that I think of it, we actually did mention that we're doing a bonus episode of Magic Copy in the main episode, so what I was about to say doesn't matter at all. So let's just cut straight to it. The review of Magic Cop from 1990, one of the most beloved of the Mr. Vampire imitations or spin-offs, if you will. And the imitation and spin-off of Lam Ching Ying's famous on-screen persona as well. You know, that was always fun when you got some variation. And in this one you do. It's another stab at transferring the hopping vampire genre to modern day, akin to Mr. Vampire 2. But what happens here is Lam Ching Ying is a vampire-busting cop, if you will.
Oh, yeah.
Lam Ching Ying busting vampires and ghosts, his style, Hong Kong style, the Lam Ching Ying way, but being a cop at the same time, and that's cool.
That here it is.
Effing cool. It's directed by Steven Dong Wai, his feature directing debut, mostly known as an action director, as well as an actor. He's visible as a kid in Enter the Dragon, as a young Shaolin Temple student. I think that's at the beginning of the film, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes.
Yeah. It's been such a long time, so I don't remember him, and definitely didn't know of Steven Dong Wai back then. And he's also in Hardboiled as playing Chiang Fat's informant in Hardboiled. Nice little bit of supporting acting there. He action directed alongside Blackie Ko on A Better Tomorrow. And he joined Vampire Season, if you will, because he worked on Mr. Vampire 3 in the action directing capacity. And he's very much a talent in demand still. He even went to Hollywood to do martial arts choreography for 2002's Scooby-Doo. Yeah, and that was sort of a result of that being a trend at the time. I think, you know, obviously Matrix came out, Crouching Tiger came out, the Yuns were all of a sudden in demand, and Charlie's Angels came out, and I think Scooby-Doo came after Charlie's Angels, so it's kind of, I don't know if you should say that the quality was increasingly, you know, lowered, but because I've never seen Scooby-Doo.
I was just laughing more at the fact that Scooby-Doo has action choreography.
there was some wire stuff, I believe, in slow motion or what have you. So it felt like, from the clips I've seen, again, totally out of context, that it was you know, a decision to echo a trend, not necessarily the best one. But having said that, I've not seen Scooby-Doo. No real desire to either. So we'll leave it at that. Did you guys see Scooby-Doo?
No.
Yeah, I had kids at the time, so.
Do you even remember that? Ooh, 10 minutes of my Hong Kong martial arts style action, or what was it?
There's some kind of few bits of physical action, if I remember, but nothing you'd really call spectacular or anything.
Right. No animated Scooby-Doo doing Matrix-style slow-motion twirls in the air and shit like that, or did they, the actual humans did the sort of stunts?
There were kind of some, kind of sinister, sort of heavy types kind of hanging around, and I think they did a bit of physical action. But
right. Well, when I haven't said that, tracking back to Charlie's Angels, which was Yun Chung Yan, action directed that, I thought that at the time was fun, but it's been like 10 years since I saw it, so who knows if that action even feels any fun nowadays. So, but anyway, Steven is still a talent that's demanded out there. He did action for Dante Lam's Beastalker, was involved in Bodyguards and Assassins. I'm not sure if he was the sole action director on that one or not. I'm actually, because we're keeping it kind of loose here, I'm actually going to look that up right now. If he if he was alone in that regard on Bodyguards and Assassins. There we are, 2009, along with someone called Lee Tat Choi. So it was not even Donnie Yen was kept was kept out of the action directing team.
Yeah.
I mean, he doesn't necessarily direct action on every one of his movies. Not even Ip Man, if I believe. So
nope.
So if he's Sam an actor, he's an actor. Yeah, exactly. And he was also on in that capacity on Mulan and the Reign of Assassins. But tracking back to his directing skills, Steven Tung Wai, so they're very much evident in this one, I think, but also in the kick-ass and also heartfelt, actually, movie called Fox Hunter from 1995, starring Jade Leung and Jordan Chan. And it was really a kick-ass action movie. It's so much fun, but it also has a pretty valid little drama portion. Without, it's not melodramatic. It's unexpected the way it develops its story and why you don't expect it to be concerned with story at all. And it's kind of fun, despite the great poster being of Jade Leung in sort of a miniskirt and Jordan Chan tied with a hand grenade in his mouth. It's still a nice mixture of those two elements. I was very impressed and I had so much fun. So Steven's action is I think it's very much underrated. People tend to forget him in the large, you know, talent pool of action directors throughout the years, but he's still out there. Magikop was, as we said, his debut, but it was also produced by Lam Ching-ying. So here we go, you know, dedicating himself to the genre and the character, being on board with all of it, and especially when there seemed to be care and creativity being put forth even beforehand, and that was something he could bring, obviously, when he was inspired. But we'll get to that. Plot, taken from the Yes Asia entry for the film. So Lam Ching-ying is Uncle Feng, a former cop who's called back into service when a supernatural drug ring comes knocking. Don't you hate that when the supernatural drug ring comes knocking?
Such a bastard.
Yeah, I mean, the biggest cliche in the world. This ring of nefarious dealers led by sexy Japanese action star Michiko Nishiwaki, who was in Malaki Stars, among other things. Did you do any more Jackie Chan movies? Millionaire's Express, was she in that? Even though that was a summer one, but...
Don't think so.
Oh, okay. I'm just taking a chance here. I'm not doing any research. I'm just thinking she must have been in more than just My Lucky Stars. But then again, looking at her filmography, there was actually not any more Jackie Chan or Samo movies. That's a shame. Yeah. But then again, she gets knocked out quite quickly in My Lucky Stars.
Yep.
It's one of those build-ups and then just Samo whacks her in the face and... dum. She's in God of Gamblers, obviously, in the beginning gambling scene with Giant Fat, which is great stuff.
In the line of Jury 3 as well.
Yes, that's right.
Wouldn't that, yep.
Being apparently, her character is apparently called Michiko Nishiwaki in that one.
Yep.
It's nice and easy. I've always liked when Andy Lau plays Andy and so forth, you know. So,
oh, yeah. Yeah.
But anyway, she leads this ring of nefarious dealers. They employ ghosts and vampires to handle the drug smuggling. And the Royal Hong Kong Police Force needs someone like Uncle Feng to point the way. And he's aided by a couple of Hong Kong cops, played by Wilson Lam and Michael Mew QY, who we touched upon in the director series recently. And Uncle Feng prepares with them to rout the supernatural bad guys with every Taoist trick in his considerable arsenal. That's a great plot. So, again, doing our usual format. In short, David, how's Magikop for you? Do you like it?
Yeah, it's a really fun transplant of the Mr. Vampire thing to like a modern day setting. You know,
it's actually known as Mr. Vampire 5 somewhere. Which is not in Hong Kong though, so they've they recognize that it's Mr. Vampire-esque. Let's just slap something recognizable on it, even though Magikop is a great title in itself. But
yeah, I mean that was what it was called here in the UK on VHS.
Oh really? Well, cool. Was that the Eastern Heroes release?
I think it was. Yeah,
I thought the Eastern Heroes released it as Magikop, but I might have been mistaken. Okay, go on.
Yeah. Lam Ching-ying, another really good performance from him. You know, obviously, because of the setting, it's a different kind of thing than, you know, Mr. Vampire or Vampire versus Vampire. But, you know, he's really good in it. There's some really solid, more than solid support performances. And, you know, there's what's not to like.
Right. What about you, Tom? In quick bite take on the film.
Yeah, I think it's not only one of the best and most unique entries in the series. I think it's easily one of, if not the quintessential Lan Chin-Yung role. The grumpy, wise and spiritual ex-cop trying to get along with the system he feels distanced from, in an alien place, trying to get along with people younger and more sceptical than him. And he's so perfect as the protective parent as well in this, which we touched upon in the previous conversation. I think this he gets a chance to shine as like a father figure. I think he does really well with.
And I'm totally on board with you guys too. I think it's I like it probably the most out of the genre, even, you know, the Mr. Vampire series, because it was my first Lam Chi-ying movie, and it's still special. It still has quality, but it holds a special place in my heart. We're watching it on a full screen, which is not a problem, but the cinema print always had on video anyway really faded subtitles. It was fucking difficult to read them, but it didn't matter. It absolutely didn't matter. And I just realized when I saw it, you know, who is this guy? Well, I know he's the guy to be this guy. No doubt about it. You just knew when you saw him, especially in the opening scene, you know, whoa, what is this? This is cool. Because it was kind of early on in my Hong Kong movie viewing fandom, if you will. But it really affected me. I thought it was so cool. And then it affected me even more so when I found out a year or two later after I watched it that Lam Chin-Ying passed away. And it really hit me. Literally, I thought it was so sad. I mean, this guy is no more. He was so cool. But obviously, I got to explore more, and that's always great. But, you know, imagine how it felt for those who didn't know of his illness. He died of cancer. He kept it from the public. And imagine those who worked with him for so long getting this news and respected him so much. I mean, he was a close friend and associate of Sammo Hung, assisting on action and all of that. So before we go into review, I guess I got to ask you, what was your first exposure to Lam Chin-Ying, if you even remember that? Do you remember that, Tom?
I think it might be My Lucky Stars, to be honest.
Right.
I think it was
villain in that one?
Yep, he's a villain. Just looking at his filmography. Yeah, it must have been. I think it was when I was first getting into Jackie Chan and then learning about Sammo and learning about Yuen Bo and just learning about Yuen Hwar and Lam Chin-Ying and just everyone, and then obviously from there you jump onto their own their own films.
So he stands out quite a bit in My Lucky Stars. I'm saying that, I haven't seen it yet, so
I think he he's one of the villains at the end. I'm trying to think of what he's doing, because I think he stands out at the end, and he has a nice little brawl with he does, yeah. Which just from that you could tell that he was definitely a fierce fighter. And from there, yeah, just went through his filmography, and obviously he starred with Sammo a lot and did action choreography in pretty much, I mean, a lot of his 80s stuff he helped alongside,
right,
with the choreography, and also just small supporting roles in most of his films throughout the 80s.
Do you remember, David, when you first saw him, the kind of movie you can pinpoint that was the one?
I'm pretty sure, actually, it was Mr. Vampire, because that is quite a cult kind of film here in the UK, because it's been on TV like a few times.
Yeah, and even had the Made in Hong Kong tape released back in the day. I have that still, and the Hong Kong Legends DVD came out as well, so they've never been shy about exposing Lam Chin-Ying to the UK, which is good. I mean, I hope the UK audiences can kind of notice after a while that guy's cool.
Yeah, I mean, it's the Hong Kong Legends DVD now is really hard to find, and if you can find a new copy of that, you can probably expect to pay about 50 quid for it. It's not cheap.
Nothing that Cinesia reissued when they reissued Hong Kong Legends stuff. They only maybe focused more on the Bruce Lee stuff.
I mean,
I think it's not on the map yet. I don't think. I think it might get a re-release.
It'd be nice. Yeah, I mean, even the Hong Kong reissue is quite a hard find as well now. It's not.
Yeah, because I think Fortune Star did put it out. It's also was released in America on Region 1, so possibly you can get it there, the remastered print of it. So and since it's 2012, yeah, 12, you know, you can get it on the internet easily as well. Yeah. So
I remember seeing it on, you know, because I was kind of getting into the films at that point, and you know, I just was conscious of this. There's like a brief season of films on Channel 4, you know, kind of Asian films that had kind of a supernatural sort of element to them.
Question, is Channel 4 a channel that everybody gets, or is it a cable channel?
It's like BBC. It's one of those channels that everyone can get. And I just, you know, I was kind of getting into the films at that point. And they're showing this on, you know, and you kind of get into the sort of the fun elements of it. But when, you know, he starts doing all this sort of Taoist priest bits and, you know, the charms on the yellow paper like we've been talking about, I just thought, you know, he just really, you know, at that stage I was thinking, oh, it's just really, you know, great, you know, authority in his sort of, you know, his demeanour and his actions. It was just really kind of sort of magnetic almost. Mm-hmm. And I thought, you know, and the films remained, you know, in the original film, original Mr. Vampire has remained one of my favourites ever since.
Touch upon his role in My Lucky Stars. Yeah, he has a sizable fight at the end with Yumbo. I'm just looking at a picture of him in the film as well. He's a cool bastard. He's in his he's in his grey suit. Yeah, he definitely stands out amongst the villains in it.
Right on. And a standout in Magic Corp, obviously. And I'll open up the discussion kind of here. And as I mentioned in the Vampire versus Vampire review, but it's even more true for this one. It's so encouraging this late in the game, because in 1990 the genre had been around for a number of years. In 1992 it kind of faded. It was so encouraging that there was so much juice left in someone, especially Lam Ching Ying. And it's further proof that when creative minds feel inspired and get together, then there can be a reference work made, and Magic Corp is a reference work. You know, if you want to recommend something, you can recommend Mr. Vampire and Magic Corp, and if they like those, you can watch it in any order. You don't need to watch Mr. Vampire first, but if you like what you see, then there is more stuff to recommend. And even though the, you know, Lam Ching isn't with us anymore, that the catalog is so impressive and so much fun to have, and it's history, it's film history really. And Magic Corp should be talked of in a not important movie, but man, does it lead the genre well. And so that's my sort of first note. So what do you want to start with in terms of your impressions of the film, David?
It's one of those, like I mentioned before in reference to another film, it's a real strong reminder for me of my early years of watching Hong Kong films. I remember having the VHS and watching it again and again. It's just it's just a really, really vivid memory, and still have a lot of fun with it even now, all these years later.
Therefore, Tom, is this a fairly new experience for you, Magic Corp? Have you seen it a few times throughout the years?
I think I picked it up for Halloween about 2 years ago.
Right. Yeah, you got a Hong Kong DVD release a few years ago. Finally.
Yeah. So I think that's the one I picked up. But I think it was just Stu's recommendation. I think he said something about it. And
it's
I started
right.
to pick it up. I think it was that, yeah.
I'm bro. It's all right.
Yeah, and I've watched it maybe 2 or 3 times, and I've watched it, I think, more often with the dub on the DVD more than the actual original audio, because it's just a great dub. It's really well performed, and surprisingly good. What I like about the film is it just takes the vampires and the mysticism formula of the series, and it transfers to a more, you know, realistic setting. And in effect, it makes the fantastical elements even more entertaining, as they're so spectacular and unexpected in comparison to the setting. Like, they just come out of nowhere.
I mean, you can't predict what going to see in this movie. Look at the opening. You know, set during the Ghost Festival, where they burn sacrifices and all that to them. And you know, it goes in hand in hand with that female creativity. I mean, they are absolute geniuses as conveying when the spirit world knocks on our world, as you know, the ash remains in the fire pot start spinning in the air. You know, they rig up, you know, essentially your burnt paper on wires, and then Lam Shin Ying, you know, starts to rectify the situation in his cop outfit, which is a shame we don't get to see that more in the film. I think it's such iconic to have Lam Shin Ying, knowing him as we do, in the cop outfit, but you do have it on the poster, which is iconic enough and all that. But I just loved seeing this for as my first Lam Shin Ying movie, where you see him work the paper dolls and the yellow paper and set fire to them, and all those gags, which are simple classic physical gags, absolutely are jaw-dropping in their creativity, and it's so well shot and edited. You know, looking at that opening scene alone, you know, actual filmmakers were responsible for this. Actual filmmakers.
Yes. Yeah.
So you know, you get giddy talking about it, but what it also is, this movie, it's a buddy cop comedy. Actually, if you look at it, it's kind of taken out of that template as well, which I like. But it's not a comedy in the vein of grating comedies, you know, You had an issue with Vampire versus Vampire in that regard, but you don't have that issue with this movie, Tom.
No, I think the comedy is very subtle, and it definitely comes along more kind of charming than grating, and more charming than, you know, it's not laugh out loud funny, but it's just it's really enjoyable. There's a scene, I think there's an action scene in the morgue, which is awesome. I mean, it's an awesome scene alone. You get a vehicle crash and, you know, some nice comedy and explosion gag, but Lam Shin Ying gets his foot in the door, literally, and it's just bits like that where it's quite charming and funny, as opposed to just, you know, silly stuff.
Yeah, there's no humor in this.
No. It's definitely. I think a lot of it comes from Michael Mukiwai's character as well, which, in comparison to his role in a previous Dimension film on the Poff Network, Men from the Gutter. Yes. Which I, you know, I had a couple of issues with. I mean, just looking at this, he's grown so much as a presence.
Seven years later,
from the
gutter, yeah.
And he's so much more natural and charming, and he's a perfect, slightly silly foil to the straight faced Lam Shin Ying. So I think their relationship works particularly well throughout the film.
Yeah, I mean, the main conflict here is between Wilson Lam and Lam Shin Ying, you know, despite, you know, there's a line just before the title card that Taoist priest and policeman both work for God, and it's a neat kind of setup to that conflict, that age-old cliche conflict of, you know, going by the book or being sort of a, you know, not playing by the book. In this case, it's you know, logic, rules versus spiritual beliefs and supernatural occurrences in our world. Which is not, you know, it's not classic drama, but it's a nice little rivalry between Wilson Lam and Lam Shin Ying, and he is a fucking perv though, Wilson Lam, because he's a bit of a touchy-feely cop. You know, that would be kind of sexual harassment nowadays, and even back then, you know, he smashes the bottoms of his female colleagues, and but Wilson, rather Lam Shin Ying, you know, dresses him down, you know, and he needs to protect his niece as well, so he Wilson Lam almost, you know, slaps Lam Shin Ying's niece on the butt, but he puts a bit of a cake there instead. So,
yeah, I love it when the first introduced and Wilson Lam, he smacks the female cop's bum, and Lam Shin Ying just looks at him like, who the fuck is this guy? Like,
yeah, that look commands respect, though.
And the whole relationship between them, I think it's one of the main highlights of the film, because there's some nice, like, character growth in Wilson Lam, and I think the part where he sticks up for Uncle Feng, like, near the middle, and you can see their relationships growing is quite sweet. I think it's one of the highlights of the film, their relationship. There's some great moments between them, both as enemies and both as kind of starting to get along with each other.
I mean, everybody singles out Mukiwai in this movie in his sort of interactions with Lam Shin Ying. So, and I'm sure you did as well, David. So what do you have to say about their relationship? When Mukiwai kind of is used as a puppet and tool for the various rituals and ceremonies that Lam Ching-ying uses to advance in the investigation. So what do you think of their kind of interaction?
Yeah, I kind of like that. I mean, I like the fact that they're both not kind of, skeptical. You got, you know, there's the, they'll go on one side, Lam Ching-ying on the other, and he's kind of in the middle trying to sort of, play both sides of the fence almost. You know, mm-hmm. obviously, you know, he's got to work with the other guy, but he's got respect for Lam Ching-ying as well, and, you know, he would appear to have a certain amount of interest in those, those kinds of beliefs.
Yeah.
So it's just kind of in the middle.
He's not used in like a harmful way or anything. It's more, you know, Lam Ching-ying doesn't prepare him for when he uses him during the clairvoyant chasing scene that they call it in the English dub. I don't know what the subtitles described the way Lam Ching-ying tracks Frankie Chan when he drives to Michiko's hideout. But it's a great little scene, which, by the way, ends on a fart gag, because to get Mu QI out of the trance, they pull out the incense out of his mouth, and that Lam Ching-ying knows, so he like runs away from the situation knowing that he's gonna fart and then why not end it with flatulence? It's all good fun. But I really dig their relationship as well, and as Tom said, you know, Mu QI is so much more compelling as a performer. A little bit older, looks, you know, he was a nerd back then in the Shaw Brothers days, and now he looks more nerd. And now he looks, you know, more like a leading man with a bit of a, you know, presence and weight to him, not being overweight, but, you know, he has presence. He could, and he's likable too. He's really, really likable. He doesn't play no one does really out of the cop duo play the hard-boiled cop, you know, or anything. So Mu QI, though, he can naturally be a bit of a goof and not great, and I really, really dig seeing their interaction together with the master student relationship kind of developing, which is the better of the relationships in the movie. The Wilson Lam and the niece relationship is not, you know, anything compared to that one. But they don't really push story wise to develop that equally as the Lam Ching-ying and the Mu QI master student relationship. But it's a parallel to theirs, but that doesn't really work. But it doesn't really take up space either. So you moving on to sort of some specific scenes that The scene where you see Frankie Chan, and this is the muscular Frankie Chan and not Frankie Chan from The Prodigal Son, where they try to find him at the gym, and there's a confrontation there, and it shows that this cop, Lam Ching-ying, the Taoist priest and all that, he's a bit of a nasty one just to get ahead. He chooses to be a bit nasty, and he actually whispers to one of the members of the club, I think he says, "Go fuck your mother." Which in the subtitles it says "shit your place." And then there's a bit of a fight after that, which I like, because now it's not, you know, stoic innocence and kind of a childish he knows the push buttons. And it's kind of foul mouthed, that dub at points, you know, you got your shit and your fucks and your motherfuckers and then that go fuck your mother. Which I don't think would have been PG on the UK tape if it would have been dubbed, because the UK tape was actually rated PG.
Yeah.
With a cut to the animal cruelty, there's a scene where a cat is strangled. Not so you see the cat die on camera. It's actually, you can see it alive in the background when the scene is done, but there's some nasty business when it clearly is struggling and suffering. But still, the magic of UK VHS was PG, which is kind of cool. So I'll hold off some. On Frankie Chan, there's a wonderful detail again, echoing the creativity and the filmmakers being so on top of the game. When Lam just quickly like draws some blood from his head and draws a sign on his head, preparing for the ritual, the clairvoyant chasing ritual. I love that stuff. Again, it's not stuff you can predict beforehand, and it seems like there's an endless well of, you know, for cinema's sake, create these ways of controlling and putting spells on people and possessing people. It's just endless fun to have with that. And then you later on, of course, have the Michiko Nishiwaki confrontation between her and Lam Xingying, but they're never in the same room. They just try both and control Frankie Chan. Which is so cool. I don't know how you guys feel, if that's a kind of sequence that is, you know, I just sit there in awe. This is so cool. I don't know what it means, and I don't really care if it means anything or if it's proper. It's just so cool. Yeah. So what do you think, Tom? Is that you know, when the genre is at its best in that scene with Frankie and?
I think it does a good job of mixing the very imaginative kind of, you know, sorcery kind of action scenes with, you know, just fisticuffs. I mean, the little scraps scattered throughout the film are of fine quality. They're more one-sided takedowns by Lam Xingying most of the time, rather than lengthy one-on-ones. But if it's well within the movie, and then, yeah, we've got these kind of big, you know, one-on-one sorcery sequences, especially the finale as well, which is, it mixes, like, almost, you know, wuxia-like elements with the sorcery and, like, high-flying, but it also keeps it grounded and lets Lam Xingying show off some of his moves and, you know, his acrobatics. So it definitely gets a nice divide between the two. Got, obviously, Billy Chow in this, who pops up. I mean, they get a little brawl at the end. The only thing slightly disappointing, I suppose, is it could have been a bit lengthier, but, you know, hey, what's there works fine. And again, it works within what's actually happening in the story, which is rare. Sometimes you get a stop and a start when the action kicks in, and here it kind of like it flows along with the story. Feels like when the action scenes are coming on and things are happening, the story's progressing with it instead of coming to a standstill, which I found another, you know, great element of the film, why it works very well.
Yeah, it's certainly not boring. And did you find any dull spots, David, in Magic Cop? Can you think of any dull spots? I can't.
No. I mean, the sequence there is really creative. It's a whole other way of doing like a duel, you know. They're kind of, you know, the guys in the middle, they're, you know, they're both trying to sort of gain control. It's just, and then they, you know, and they just really sort of go to some great places. It's that weird bit where he's got an icicle that comes flying out the top of his head.
The ice spell. And I love that they convey that on screen. You know, he has an ice spell, and that means he has a fucking big-ass ice thingy stuck in his head.
It comes flying out, and then they try and grab it on the way down.
I mean, you can't have anything but fun when being in the middle of that stuff, you know. You know, there's a big lime powder garden with actually broken glass in there. And then he explains, Lam Xingying, that broken glass is, you know, takes in the sun and the moon's power to make vampires. And I love little descriptions like that. And then you fucking have, you know, they chase the little animated slime that is the ice spell as well later on. The ice spell that sort of expands when warmed up. So you got the wonderful sights like that when the actors all of a sudden you know, expands their cheeks, expand their mouth, their stomachs and all that, so they need to keep cool. I just love out of the blue elements like that. You can't predict that beforehand that may be a part of this movie, and so it's really cool. And aside from Billy Chow, who's they only have they kind of allude to the fact that he's gay, because he feels up Frankie Chan at one point. He is searching for weapons, and then he touches his butt, and then fine. I don't know why they needed that, because Billy's not in the movie.
Billy's branching out.
There was a wonderful image I saw on Facebook the other day of Billy Chow, where it says, "Remember when I played the hero?"
I've seen that.
Yeah, me neither.
Classic. He's a Joshua made that, didn't he? It was quite funny.
But you know, Billy doesn't need to play the hero necessarily. He's always good, and you know, and Wilma is in the film as well, by the way.
Yeah.
He's in a wheelchair, and one of the old superiors of Lam Ching Yi, I guess. And there's the obligatory, you know, the superior yelling at you for causing your the path of destruction in a movie, you know. I love a buddy cop comedy, you know. Why did you blow that up? And why did you destroy that? So it sort of taps into that, which is funny. That because a Hong Kong buddy cop supernatural comedy with Lam Ching Yi.
Yeah.
Why not? And going a little bit into the finale, I summarize it as a PG-friendly, almost Evil Dead type of ending.
Yeah.
That's not unfair, actually, to draw a comparison to Evil Dead, because in the way that Michiko actually transforms, she does look like she's straight out of Evil Dead at one point, but it might be a vague comparison, but this movie is energetic and it's not dull. And Sam Raimi at this time, his movies had energy and pace as well. And you know, for a few brief moments, I would like to compare Stephen Dong Wai's direction to Sam Raimi's energy and pace in the Evil Dead movies, because it's so much fun to watch, and you never know where it's going to take you. Kind of, it's very very unpredictable, and my. My kind of summary of the film, personally, is that in the movie, there's a merging of the old and the new, but also it's finally a movie like this in this genre makes the leap to modern from period, and makes it therefore it's one of the very best efforts because of the attempt and the creativity on display. And it's such good fun, and the dub that is on the Hong Kong DVD of the film, it's actually a Cantonese track as always, but there's also an English dub that is, as Tom said, quite well performed. I like Lam Ching Ying's dub. It's sort of a stoic, and the voice sounds dull, but I think it works by design because he's a very to the point character.
Yeah,
and it's not goofy in that sense at all. I think they really did well on that dub. So if you have that DVD, David, and that dub, do screen it with dub sometime. It's actually really, really cool.
Yeah, I'll have to give it a go. I had a bit of a... When I was watching it the other day, I gave it a bit of a try out, and I thought, well, you know, it actually sounded pretty good, but I'm really used to watching things with Cantonese tracks, but next time I watch that, I'll give it a go.
And you wouldn't be opposed to re-watching it... you know, quite quickly after this viewing, I guess.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's definitely one of those films. It's definitely a regular rewatch. It doesn't lose anything from being watched at regular intervals at all, I think.
Yeah. It's one of those I like to call like hangover films, like when you just can't be asked getting out of bed, you just stuck to the bed, you put Magic Cop on, and you're in your happy place for an hour and a half.
Yeah.
All the more reason to screen it with a dub, so you don't need to read at all. Just listen to it.
Yeah.
It's so much good fun, and I'll end my review with some minor notes that I picked up on during the film, and there's a wonderful subtle comedy sequence when Lam Ching Ying is in the police station at the beginning of the film, when he starts studying the then high technology with the printers and the computers, and his looks are priceless, because he kind of panics. Whoa, is this what it's like being a cop? And then he sees the printer just spitting out paper. He fucking unplugs the printer and the computer because he thinks there's something wrong with it. And everybody, oh my God, the computers are down. What are we going to do? Which is great. I mean, the priceless looks of panic in Lam Ching Yi's face when playing this character is absolutely great. And as well, when he goes to be Wilson Lam's very odd apartment, there's priceless timing in his looks, Lam Ching Ying's, when he deals with the alarm. After they put in the code to unlock the alarm, he kind of touches the keypad, and then it starts wee wee wee, and he's not in his element there. He's kind of out of his comfort zone, which is always great. And that apartment is a wonderful piece of design. It's a bachelor apartment where there's a phone booth toilet.
Yeah, phone booth toilet. You got a bath. It's got like blinds for walls, and
yes.
it's just really,
maybe a comment on the, you know, the apartment situation in Hong Kong. You utilize what you can find, including taking phone booths off the street and putting it into your apartment. And Lam Xing Ying is going to live there with his niece, so he rearranges the apartment to fit his niece and him. It's a bit of a rivalry going on there with Wilson Lam as well, because Lam Xing Ying could sleep very well and easy in a hammock. Wilson Lam can't. So their rivalry goes on there. And finally, by the way, if you remember Mr. Vampire, Lam Xing Ying is the old master, kind of, but it looks, he's very young in those movies. They have glued on gray hair onto him, but finally he's grown a bit older now. He doesn't need any, you know, gray hairs glued onto him. I think he's finally at the correct age playing this character in Magic Cop. Finally it fits. I always noticed that with Mr. Vampire 1. You know, he's great, but he's young.
The character isn't. It'd be like, it's the difference between sort of like very early 30s and like about 40 probably, isn't it? It's just you know, it's another few years and it kind of looks a bit more natural.
And a wicked haircut as well.
Yeah.
The haircut goes in line with the eyebrows, you know, very sharp, like almost like lightning bolts. I don't know how else to describe it, but it looks great. I mean, who better to wear, you know, who could wear that respectably other than Lam Xing Ying? And finally, a little bit of a story point on the niece, who is played by the actress Wong Mei-hwa, who was in total in 3 movies.
So it's
very like a Joey Wong type of a look to her. I like her. The character has learned to deal with her uncle's sort of stoicness and strict rules. And she's respectful of that, but can laugh it off and challenge those rules without being rebellious or obnoxious, just for the sake of it. And it kind of will pay off by the end when you see actually Uncle Feng has changed his ways as well, and now he can adapt to new rules and allow her more freedom. And she obviously a pretty face for a pretty useless role on paper, but she makes the most of it. I mean, she's not portrayed as brainless or anything, which this kind of role could have been, you know, just a pretty face and help me, uncle, help me, but it never comes off as that. So I do like her, but she in total 1 cameo in Escape from Coral Cove and apparently an inmate in Jailhouse Eros and this movie. So apparently married to Eric Tsang, according to the bio on the Hong Kong Movie Database, if it's still true, I don't know, but apparently. So Eric Tsang took her out of the movie industry, I guess.
Go, Eric.
Yeah. So that's my final notes on the film. Do you guys have anything else you want to add? What about you, David?
No, just other than to sum up and say, it's, you know, I think it's been already been said that it's a signature role for him, for Lam Xing Ying. You know, this and Mr. Vampire's, you know, two of his very best.
What about you, Tom?
Yeah, I mean, just to sum up, it's...
This is how I sum it up. Go fuck your mother! And that means a masterpiece.
Yeah, it's a very strong film. I mean, the good guys are very likeable. And even if they aren't in the very beginning, they eventually become likeable. It's got the right amount of subdued comedy mixed with some decently done effects, but some great physical moments, and just very fresh and creative, and... definitely brought something unique to the, you know, by then well-worn vampire template. I mean, the ending was lovely as well, and it just leaves you with a smile on your face and great little music piece capping it off as well.
And a little type of wonderful freeze frame Hong Kong ending. No, like Wong Jing jumping in the air, wah! But still, freeze frame.
As I said many times, just subtle. Like, everything about the film, like even though it's got these over-the-top action scenes, like the comedy's subtle, the kind of the emotion there, sort of, and yeah, the ending's just very subtle as well, and it's just nice, just leaves you with a smile on your face.
Yeah. And I guess that's it for us for bonus episode 1, so I hope you enjoyed this addition to the Vampire Season. I will promise to do more, probably for the next Vampire Season, we'll pick one of the three movies we're going to cover for to have as a bonus episode. I'm tempted to go with Crazy Safari as bonus episode, because why not?
Yeah, why not?
Yeah.
So because it's such a talk about standout, you know. The Gods Must Be Crazy meets Mr. Vampire, and literally that is what it is, and it's absolutely great. Have you guys seen Crazy Safari? Or yep. Would that be the first time?
That would be a first time for me, that one.
Right on. With narration, although unsubbed still, by Stephen Chow and Umantat. They narrate essentially Nick Zhao's dialogue, the little Bushman actor from The Gods Must Be Crazy. Mm. So they provide commentary essentially on, but yep. It's all good fun, and we'll get to that eventually now during the next month or two. So that's the conclusion of bonus episode one. So I've been your host, Kenneth Olsen, and with me was Tom Kent Williams and David Harris. So say your goodbyes, guys.
Bye.
See ya.
Go fuck your mother. Bye. Or shit your place, Robert.